This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Two court decisions on water issues in western North Carolina that have effects on the rest of the state. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled against homeowners seeking to sue a manufacturer of electronics over water contamination. That decision could have derailed other lawsuits, most immediately a Camp Lejeune, about decades-old water contamination on the base. But we just learned that the General Assembly is drafting legislation that could counter that ruling. We'll find out more about that, but first we have to find out about the suit itself and the Supreme Court ruling. And to do that, we will talk with John Boyle, who is a reporter with the Asheville Citizen-Times. Hello, John.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. You wrote about that U.S. Supreme Court ruling in favor of CTS Corporation. Tell us about the argument and what that suit was all about.
Well, this suit and the case goes back to 1999. That's when pollution was first discovered by nearby residents on the site. A group of homeowners led by a man named Peter Wahlberger sued CTS Corporation trying to get damages because they felt it impacted their property values. That's where the suit originated. It was about 25 landowners whose property was on or near the CTS site sued, and it ended up going all the way to the Supreme Court.
And what was the case before the Supreme Court? What was the argument there?
Well, it ended up coming down to this technical law on the statute of repose, which North Carolina and a handful of other states have. And it essentially it set a limitation of 10 years. A case must be brought within that time of 10 years under North Carolina law. The pollution was not noted until 1999, and CTS had closed their operation in 1986 and actually sold the property in 1987. So when the justices heard this case, it went through all the state levels all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the justices ruled 7-2 in favor of CTS, essentially saying Justice Anthony Kennedy, writing for the majority, said that Congress did not intend to preempt state statutes of repose laws that set a deadline for property claims, and he said federal environmental laws only cover statutes of limitation where the clock starts running at the time of the injury. So that's the significant difference. It's not the time of the discovery.
Right, and that statute of limitations at the federal level is, in fact, 25 years, and the 10-year statute of repose here in North Carolina, the clock starts once the last incident of contamination is fixed, essentially. So once you stop contaminating, clock starts, you've got 10 years under the statute of repose in North Carolina. After that, it's too late to file. And the homeowners found themselves in that breach, past 10 years, but less than 25.
Right. And you can imagine for them how upsetting this is. I mean, they've lived next to this site for all these years. And ironically enough, on Friday, the EPA came and told 13 residents right nearby they had to evacuate, and they're now staying in hotels because the most recent round of testing found that air vapor actually has excessively high levels of the pollutant TCE, which is a carcinogen and causes a lot of other problems. So it comes right on the heels of this. And one lady, Dot Rice, who lives by right nearby there, she said, with everything else going on right now, this is just another slap in the face.
So homeowners there, particularly those who filed suit, upset. It has huge implications for families who lived at Camp Lejeune during the contamination there. They'd been drinking poison water. And again, many of them filed suit after this 10-year statute of repose. So you think if it went to the U.S. Supreme Court, that would be it for the homeowners in Asheville and in the Asheville area and for the residents of Camp Lejeune. But we just learned that this morning the state legislature started to work on a bill that could actually undo the effects of the ruling, a new bill that would extend the time allowed to file suit over environmental harm. And I think this is key, over environmental harm, is making its way through the legislature on a fast track. One supporter, Representative Chuck McGrady, he's a Republican from Henderson, and I spoke with him just moments ago, and I asked him about the bill.
Well, the bill actually has been passed through committee this morning. It's Senate Bill 574, and it relates to the litigation involving the CTS site in Asheville and indirectly relates to the issues surrounding the contaminated water at Camp Lejeune.
So both then the camp pleasure and would all other, I mean, anybody else bringing suit also be included in this? It essentially extends the statute of limitations to the federal limit.
It deals with the statute of repose and the specific issue that the Supreme Court was addressing in the opinion that it announced just recently. And North Carolina is one of a handful of states that have this statute of repose, which can be used as a affirmative defense by defendants to defend claims by plaintiffs who say they were damaged by, let's say, contaminated water under the federal law.
So how does this legislation work? Does it repeal the 10-year statute of repose, or does it change it in some way? How does it work?
It now you're getting legal on me. I believe it knocks out the statute of repose,
okay,
thus not providing the affirmative defense that was raised by the defendant in the Asheville suit. And my understanding is that the federal government has now asserted in the Camp Lejeune litigation the precedence of the Asheville suit to try to defeat the claims of the former military plaintiffs in that case, that they were harmed by the contaminated water related to whatever set of operations at Camp Lejeune.
And you get the sense that the leadership in both the House and the Senate are behind this?
I have a sense that the leadership in the House is behind it. I have had no contact with the leadership in the Senate, but I would assume, given that this has been fast-tracked, that there is some agreement on that, yes.
All right. And why do this? What's behind this legislation?
Well, obviously, this is being used to the statute of repose here is being used to block claims that the members of the General Assembly, if assuming they pass the legislation, don't believe should be blocked by our statute of repose.
All right. Representative McGrady, thanks very much for talking with us.
Yeah, bye.
That's Representative Chuck McGrady. He's a Republican from Henderson talking about fast-track legislation making its way through the legislature now that could actually undo yesterday's the Supreme Court ruling earlier this week. So I'm talking with John Boyle, a reporter for the Asheville Citizen-Times that broke just this morning. John, so I'm sure you haven't had time to talk with the families. Was there any indication that they had an expectation that they might even be able to go back to the legislature if they lost this suit? How surprised might they be to hear this news today?
Well, as you say, I haven't had a chance to talk to them yet, and I've not heard this on anybody's radar as far as the state legislature addressing it. I am sure they will be happy and relieved if they can make this go through and if it could have a retroactive effect where they could go back and be able to sue. They are really, over and over again, what I've heard them say is the main thing they want is a cleanup of the site. This polluted water plume has been sitting there for 15 years or more, and they've had a long struggle with the EPA and CTS, and they really just want to get the source of the pollution cleaned up.
How large an area are we talking about?
Well, in the lawsuit, they mentioned 53.5 acres where these residential landowners' property is. So you've got that area, but there's also been this the pollution has traveled somewhat where it's the next-door neighbors, Dot Rice and her son, Terry Rice, it's shown up in their springs. So, and there's been some reports, and CTS has disputed this, but there's been some that have shown up a half mile away. We should mention all these people several years ago, they put them on city water supplies, so nobody's actually drinking this water.
All right, now, but of course they were back then. Tell us a little bit about CTS, what they did, and when, what are we talking about in the water? What made its way into the water supply?
This was a company that produced electronic components from 1959 through 85. They are now headquartered in Elkhart, Indiana, but they were here for decades, employed a lot of folks. As part of what they did some electroplating, and they had to clean the components, and they used a chemical called TCE. which I'm not going to try to pronounce the technical name, but it is a it was very commonly used degreaser essentially back then, and they used quite a bit of it. They had storage tanks on the facilities, and we had a former plant operator write an op-ed piece for us lately, and he said that they were not aware of this leak, that it was in a concrete tank that had apparently a slow seepage for years and years, and that they never intentionally polluted the site. But it is listed as a carcinogen, and it could be damaging to the central nervous system as well.
All right, John, and roughly, I don't have much time left, but how many families are involved in the suit and potentially other lawsuits?
In this particular suit, there were 25 residential landowners, but there's probably dozens of other families in nearby that have been affected by this. Certainly, dozens of families that have been put on city water. So there's people that have moved in and out over the years. So it's difficult to put an exact number on it.
All right, John, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. John Boyle's a reporter for the Asheville Citizen-Times. More news about the water in Asheville. Asheville City will be able to maintain control over its water supply. We'll find out about that when The State of Things continues on North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. After that, the history of Okanoche Speedway in Hillsboro. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. We got some late breaking news today on The State of Things, and in the state of North Carolina, the legislature now working on a bill that would essentially undo a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that allowed or actually threw out a lawsuit by homeowners in the Asheville area over contamination by a company that is no longer doing business there. This new legislation, should it pass, would grandfather in that lawsuit and perhaps Camp Lejeune as well in this environmental case. That's only one of the stories involving water in western North Carolina. Wake County Superior Court Judge Howard Manning ruled that the city of Asheville could keep control of its water system. He struck down a law that would have transferred that to a regional authority. Mark Barrett's a reporter for the Asheville Citizen-Times, and he joins us now. Hello, Mark.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Tell us about the case itself and what was at stake here in Judge Manning's decision.
Asheville and Buncombe County have argued about water for literally decades. There was a consolidation of the water system back in the Depression era, and one of the consequences of that was that Asheville was unable to charge more for water outside the city limits than inside. That's created a lot of disputes. Last year, the legislature passed a law that would have transferred control of the water system to the Metropolitan Sewerage District, which operates sewage systems in Buncombe County. Judge Manning said the law is unconstitutional and struck it down.
Some of the argument over this, I guess, is that the city was charging maybe, or did it, different rates for people in the city and outside the city. Is that part of what was at stake here?
No, they were unable to do that. And the state, there have been a couple of state laws actually that have been passed that prevent that from happening in Buncombe County in Asheville, making Asheville unique among the state. Typically, municipalities around the state will use water and sewer as an incentive for annexation. They might charge double the amount for water outside their limits than inside. So when they come along and say, we're going to annex your property, people don't resist as much because they say, well, I'll pay more in property taxes, but I'll get a break on my water bill. Asheville has not had that ability, and they've wanted it for some time. Tim Moffitt, the local legislator who sponsored the bill, said he wanted to transfer the system in part to foreclose that possibility.
I see. And tell us about Judge Manning's ruling and how that changed things.
But Judge Manning's ruling is interesting in that legislators have really leaned on municipalities and taken away a fair number of their powers or their assets over the past 3 years or so. And North Carolina is what some people call a Mother May I state. Localities derive pretty much all of their powers from the state. And some people have thought there's sort of no limit to how much the state could do to localities, to municipalities and counties. Judge Manning basically said, well, yes, there is. The state constitution says you can't have a local bill that deals with certain subjects, in this case, non-navigable streams of all things in health and sanitation, that, you know, if you pass legislation dealing with those things, it's got to apply statewide. The Asheville Water Bill was written in such a way that Asheville was never named, but it was the only area in which the law applied.
And we know that this is going on with airports as well, Charlotte,
right.
and here in the Triangle, Jordan Lake, where municipal officials wanted to have authority over zoning. That was actually taken away from the city of Durham, a one-shot
right.
aimed directly at the city of Durham from the state legislature. So from an ideological standpoint, of course, you got Republicans now looking at big government, preferring big government over local control, a kind of an ideological paradox.
Well, it may or may not be coincidental that most city governments, or large city governments at least in North Carolina, are controlled by Democrats. Certainly that's the case in Asheville. It's an all-Democratic city council. So this Asheville decision is a, you know, a key point in that overall trend. There have also been cities where the legislature reversed annexations that municipalities enforced for example.
All right. So this was done at the state court level. What's the next step? Likely to be an appeal?
There almost surely will be an appeal. It's up to Roy Cooper's office, the attorney general. But both sides are predicting it'll go to the state court of appeals. Judge Manning's decision was pretty comprehensive on the city side, so that makes the city fairly optimistic in terms of how they think things will come out at the court of appeals. But
Judge Manning sided with four of the 6 points that the city made in its legal argument. Am I right about that?
Right. That you're right, but you know, I don't know that it's very wise to handicap what the court of appeals might do.
Okay, Mark. Thanks so much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
Mark Barrett is a reporter for the Asheville Citizen-Times.